I've been waiting for over 2 weeks to hear Tommy's sermon today. It's based on one of my favourite scriptures, is Psalm 23. And if this doesn't put a smile on your face, I don't know what will. But it's always good to be in a fellowship where people are smiling. And not just because there's tea and coffee after the service, but just because we're together and this is the body of Christ, this is family, and this is what we do. We come together to worship Jesus Christ. So I'll read Psalm 23. If I start crying during this, don't worry. It's just me. The Lord, the shepherd of his people. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Church, you can take that word to the bank. It's a promise of God that surely goodness and mercy will follow each and every one of us for the.
Okay. Well, Steve said this is a very well-known psalm, and almost everyone, whether the religious or not, has heard of Psalm 23. It's quoted so frequently and so frequently requested at funerals, so even people that don't come to church on a regular basis, most of them will go to a funeral and most of them will have heard the words of Psalm 23. It's a psalm of David, one-time shepherd boy who became king. And David's drawing on his experience of sheep and shepherding to illustrate his life's journey and this relationship with the Lord, who he'd found to be a caring shepherd and a dependable guide throughout all of his life. There's just six verses, but these verses have brought great comfort to countless people in every single generation, right through to us here today. Now, the last time I spoke, and probably nobody remembers what I spoke about, but I did speak on Psalm 23. I spoke on the first three verses, which could be titled The Shepherd on the Path. Today, I'm going to speak on verse 4, The Shepherd in the Valley. So before I do that, just a very brief recap on the first three verses, very brief. David's statement there, "The Lord is my shepherd," he's not describing simply a general role in that the Lord looks after the sheep, which he does, but he's describing as well a personal relationship with the Lord as being his shepherd, his guide and his protector throughout his life, a personal relationship. So if you and I are able to say the Lord is my shepherd, it's to know that we have a personal relationship with the Lord and he is watching over you himself. And for us, for David, the Lord was Yahweh, the Lord of the Old Testament. For us, it is Jesus who came on the scene in John 10 and said, "I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for my sheep." The statement David makes, "I shall not want," or "I shall not be in want," is a promise that with the Lord as your shepherd, you will lack nothing that is truly good for you. The shepherd knows exactly what you need, and he will provide what you need in the right way and at the right time. Now, we all understand, I think all of us here understand, that when it comes right down to it, Jesus himself is the one thing, the one real provision that you and I truly need. I would like many things, lots of stuff, we all would, but he is the only thing necessary. The only thing necessary. If we have him in our life, then we lack nothing that is truly necessary. The green pastures, the still waters, symbolised an abundance of provision. The green pastures and the still waters peace and tranquility. Tranquility, a time in our lives and a place in our lives where we can lie down, where we can rest in the Lord and enjoy his blessings without fear, without anxiety, focusing on him. Our lives can be quite often pretty chaotic and overwhelming. But the Good Shepherd knows how to guide you to places of restoration. He doesn't just mend the surface of our lives. He restores our souls, our very souls, from the inside out, as David says in verse 3. The paths of righteousness that he leads us on, these are paths he guides us on in our lives that are good for us, good for our souls, and good for us spiritually, our spiritual growth. So, green pastures, quiet waters, the restoration of our soul, paths of righteousness. It's an absolute abundance of good things we might expect in the leading of the Good Shepherd. Now, suddenly in verse 4, with the words, even though, is that what it says here? This is not quite the translation I used. Even though, it all changes and we're introduced to the darkest valley, or the valley of the shadow of death. I wonder if you've ever been uncomfortable or afraid in the dark. I remember, when I was little, preschool, I used to get to go out to stay at my granny's and have sleepovers. I had two younger brothers, twins, a couple of years younger, and I think the whole three of us was an ordeal for my mother. So I thought I was my granny's favourite, I get put out there, but really I think it was just to give my mother a bit of peace. But at my granny's, I was sleeping in the bedroom, and she had a kind of bigger house in there, was much bigger, and old-fashioned. She was old when I was young, and I'm old now. It was all pre-century, and full of big pieces of dark furniture and stuff like that. And the bed was a big brass bedstead, high up off the floor, which rattled when you get in. Anyway, she'd put me to bed, she'd read me a story, and she'd go, which was fine for about 5 seconds. And then I realised there was something under the bed. And if it wasn't under the bed, it was definitely in the cupboard, in the big tall boy thing with the mirror in the front, I could almost see it moving. So, yeah, we're all perhaps subject to a little bit of fear as children. But what about as adults? Are we ever uncomfortable in the dark as adults? Well, a number of years ago, Norm and I went to Rome for a break, quite a number of years ago. And we did all the usual stuff. We went to the Colosseum, went to the Vatican, and the last thing we went to were the catacombs, which are where all the people are buried. And your mind sets you up for this, in a way, because I'm going to the catacombs, I think there will be rows of skulls and skeletons and all sorts, because you're none of that. But anyway, we went in, and it was all right, the first bit was fine. And then we got further down, you kind of go down into the older part, and it's rough, and it's less well lit. And I was just kind of looking at it and thinking, I wonder what it would be like in the old days. And then I kind of fell back a wee bit from the group, and there was this passage going off to the side, and all the side passages were dark, no light in them. And this particular one, I looked in, and I looked down, and I could see down below, and I felt really uncomfortable. And not for £1 million would I have gone down that passage into what's down below. This part of my brain told me there was nothing to worry about, but all around here, there's a part of my brain saying there's something there. So, we don't like the dark. In the Bible, darkness is mentioned over 200 times. It's associated with things like ignorance, oppression, helplessness, evil, sin, and spiritual death. There's nothing really good in the Bible associated with darkness, at least as far as I can find. And we use the word in our everyday language to describe the negative. Dark times, I'm going through dark times. I have dark thoughts, dark deeds. The dark web is an evil place. dark secrets. There's a dark cloud hanging over us, and so on. And here in Psalm 23, David introduces the darkest valley, or as you have it here, the valley of the shadow of death, the darkest valley. It's a metaphor representing any of life's profound trials or the darkest moments and challenging times that we all go through. For all of us, every one of us, the dark valleys of this life are inevitable. And they're going to come, if they haven't arrived already, in all shapes and sizes. And many of us will have spent a lot of time in their shadow. Whether it's bereavement, grief, anxiety, depression, disappointment, illness, and so on. And perhaps some of us are in that valley right now. But the good news of this psalm is that verse 4 is for all of us, and it tells us that Jesus, the Good Shepherd, is the Good Shepherd in every circumstance of our lives and for every season of our lives. He's not only the shepherd of the green pastures and the quiet waters, he's also the shepherd that walks with us through every season. You and I, as part of his flock, are not promised a trouble-free life. We're not going to get that. We live in a world that's under the curse of sin, and there are real consequences to sin in the world. As believers, we're going to face times of illness, of bereavement, and of financial difficulty and so on, just like everybody else in the world. But the thing is, the Good Shepherd doesn't abandon us when the going gets tough. His promise is never, he will never leave us, he will never forsake us, and he will walk through us through these dark times and difficult times in our lives. Now you may notice in verse 4, David makes a change. A change in how he refers to the Lord. He switches from talking about God, where he uses the word, he guides me, he leads me, to talking to God with the word you. Why didn't he just go on to say, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil because he is with me, his rod and his staff, they comfort me. He changes to this more intimate you because it's there he speaks, I believe he speaks of the valleys he has walked, where he has felt the shadows closing in on him. The same is true of us. We're more prone to talk about God when everything in the garden of our lives is nice and rosy, or in the green pastures beside the still waters. We're more prone to talk directly to God when we're in the dark valleys, the dangerous dark valleys. In the dark, when our backs are against the wall, and the shadows close in on us, and we don't know what's going to happen next, we don't like knowing what's going to happen next, it's then that we desperately cling to God. I would suggest, and I think it's probably true, that David experienced a deeper relationship with his almighty shepherd in the darkness of the valley than in the green of the pasture. For us also, every one of us, our greatest intimacy with Jesus can and will occur during our darkest moments. And many of us know that's a truth, a reality in our lives. We've all experienced that, I think. In the first three verses, David paints a gentle picture. And if the psalm just stopped there, a gentle picture of a shepherd with the sheep describing his experience and the Lord's provision in his life. And everything makes sense to our understanding of a shepherd leading his flock to the green pastures, the quiet waters. And then we get to verse 4, and the tone changes. It doesn't fit with that. The valley of the shadow of death conjures up thoughts of a dangerous situation where a sheep's life may be in jeopardy, may be in danger. It introduces the word evil. I will fear no evil, suggesting a greater danger than simply the darkness itself. A journey away from the light and the comfort of the known to the obscurity of the unknown. In his book, The Good Shepherd, Kenneth Bailey writes this, he says, several writers have first-hand experience of valleys of darkness in Palestine, places where the waters often foam and roar, torn by jagged rocks. The path plunges downwards into a deep and narrow gorge of sheer precipices overhung by sphinx-like battlements of rocks. that almost touch overhead. Its side walls rise like the stone walls of a great cathedral. Quite a picture he paints for us, a graphic picture for us to fix in our minds. Then he goes on to tell us of his own encounter with such a place where, in 1957, a flash flood thundered through the deep and narrow gorge, killing some 50 French tourists, giving a literal sense to the shadow of death, the valley of the shadow of death. In David's day, back in David's time, the terrors of wild animals, the bloodthirsty robbers that would be hiding, they were present in the physical valley, not to mention the flash floods and other natural dangers. The reality of death was there for any traveller in the darkness of the valley. So, why on earth would a sheep be going through such a place? Had the sheep had a wee look up from the flock and decided, you know, there's something better over there. I'm going to go over there. I can hear the music and the laughter and all. I'm going to go over there, wander over there, see what's going on. Straying into sin. No. That's not the point here. The thing is, the shepherd is pictured going with the sheep through the valley and not snatching them back from the valley into the green pasture. The reason the sheep is going through the valley is because the shepherd is leading them there. The path through the valley, the path through your valley and my valley, is also a path of righteousness in which the Lord leads. If you read it, he says, he guides me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake, even though I walk through the valley, the shadow of death. It's one continuous journey. It's as if there's not a break there at all. It's all part of the journey. But again, you know, why would a good shepherd would lay down his life for his sheep, deliberately lead a wee lamb into a valley filled with danger and death threats? There's only one possible answer, and that's to get to some place better. Philip Keller, in his book, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23, and I heavily plagiarised his book in the preparation of the sermon, I'll admit to that. Psalm 23 includes this observation about these barren valleys. He says, the shepherd knows from past experience that predators like coyotes, bears or wolves can take cover in these broken cliffs and from their vantage point prey on the flock. He knows these valleys can be subject to sudden storms, flash floods that send walls of water rampaging down the slopes. There could be rock slides, mud or a dozen other natural disasters that would destroy or injure the sheep. But in spite of such hazards, he also knows that this is the best way to take his flock to the high country. And he spares himself no pains or trouble or time to keep an eye out for any danger that might develop. The high country. When you and I are walking through some unfamiliar valley and the shadows linger around us, when we receive an unwelcome diagnosis that will change our lives, when our finances are tight and perhaps you're looking for another job to try and make ends meet. These things can happen to any of us at any time. You need to know that the thing is that you're walking through it. Your valley right now, however its oppressive walls are formed, is not the destination. It's the journey. Jesus is not up ahead somewhere asking for directions and lost. That's not where he's going. He knows where he's leading you. He knows the way because Jesus himself has walked the very darkest of valleys. Our shepherd, your shepherd, has appointed even this hard time as one of his paths of righteousness for your life. And he's leading you through it, through this valley, for reasons that when we're in the valley are not apparent to us. We can't understand. But we can rest assured that he is taking us to a better place, to the high country, where the sun is warm and where the pasture is green. And this was something, David's relying on his experience as a shepherd. This was something that David, as the shepherd boy, would have done every year. When the low-level pastures were sparse, he would guide his flock through difficult dark valleys to the higher ground where there were green pastures. He knew there were green pastures and the grazing was better. So the valley is not the destination. the valley is a pathway to a place of growth. Every valley is a pathway to some place better. And we are safe because the path we're on is the shepherd's path. The road we're on is simply how he is leading us right at this point in time. But because we are his, we can walk and not run. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. We need not run through the valley in blind panic and fear and screaming and terror. We can walk through it because he is with us. So, nevertheless, how do you and I fight that natural fear we feel when we don't know what's going to happen next and our imaginations are working overtime? We can lie in bed wake up overnight in the night or in the early hours of the morning and the things go around me. The question, what if this happens? What if that happens? I've been there heaps of times. Let's look at what David says in the psalm. He says, I will fear no evil. Why? Three things. You are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. He first speaks about God's nearness, his presence to him. When you step into your valley, or when you're going through your valley, and it's so dark, you can't even see the way ahead. You don't know what's going to happen. You can't see a way forward. The Good Shepherd is something he wants you to hear. I am with you. I am with you. Don't turn to drugs or alcohol or find some other substitute that you think might help get you through this time. All you need is the presence of the Shepherd. Go back to my bedtime experience at my granny's. Or let's just wind out to all of us. Imagine a situation where you are a very young child and you're put to bed, say, by your father. So he's read the bedtime story, he's tucked you and he's given you a wee kiss and it's time to go to sleep for your father to go, shut the door, put the lights out and go down the stairs. But you're afraid, you're convinced that there's something lurking somewhere that you're afraid of. So your father's going to give you a choice. Would you rather I leave the light on when I go out the room and go down the stairs? Or turn the light out and stay with you and hold your hand until you fall asleep? What are you going to choose? I know what I would have chosen. The presence of my father in the darkness over the absence of my father in the light. It would just feel safer. Isn't that what all of us really want, most in our valleys, our dark times, the assurance that someone is there? It's remarkable to think that, you know, to be walking through a dark time in your life, a time of darkness, and not to fear, not to panic, the simple reason that you don't walk it alone. You can turn to that person and say, with confidence, you are with me. If you take a look around you, what do you see? We see a church, a fellowship of people. We're all people, brothers and sisters here. But in the language of the psalm, we're part of the flock, part of his wider flock that he collectively cares for. And you know, we benefit from being one sheep in that church of Jesus Christ. One sheep in the flock he cares. We benefit that from that. And it's great. But in the darkness, in my darkness or your darkness, it's as if somehow all the other sheep disappear. And this is between the Good Shepherd and me, or the Good Shepherd and you. Personally, the deepest comfort is that he is with me. And this is all the more precious when we take the reality of the darkness and the presence of the evil that could be there. I will fear no evil. David's not saying that the presence of the shepherd removes evil and eradicates darkness, as if to say, you know, because you are with me, that the room is somehow filled with light and happiness. No. He's not saying that. The point is, because you are with me, because you're with me, I will not fear the very real darkness or indeed the very real evil I'm facing. The comfort we feel is the presence of a shepherd during the danger, rather than the comfort of the removal of the danger. David's comfort from being in the presence of true strength is now turned towards him for his protection. His faith is not pretending that the valley or the danger isn't real. His faith is saying that his shepherd is more real than anything in the valley. If you see someone in, say, green or blue scrubs, whatever they wear, with a stethoscope around their necks, or you see someone with a tool belt, with a hammer, a saw, and a measuring tape, you know what they do. You know what they do because of what they're equipped with. When we look at verse 4, we can know what the shepherd does by what he holds in his hand. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I want the first to look at the rod. Dale Roth Davis writes this. He says, Jesus Christ, our shepherd, is no emaciated weakling. Our shepherd is a warrior, as shepherds had to be. No one can snatch a sheep out of his hand. The muscles of his arm are flexed to defend his flock. He doesn't carry a rod, a club, for nothing. He is obviously enough for whatever the valley throws at us. And he goes on to describe the rod that a shepherd would have carried. A shepherd's rod was a club made of oak with a rounded head that was whittled away from a knot of the tree. The sharp bits of metal pounded into it and was used to defend the flock against attacks. It pictures the shepherd's power wielded against dangerous enemies, be they wild animals or human thieves or whatever. Now, David would have had something like this in mind, that, you know, that the rod he himself carried would have carried and used as a shepherd boy to slay the lion and the bear. And an effective weapon. However, the rod in the hands of the good shepherd is of immeasurably greater order than the rod in the hands of a shepherd, as it were. And if you want to get an idea of that, you can look at Psalm 2, that speaks of the Lord's anointing smiting the nations with a rod of iron, sufficient to smite nations. No wonder Jesus is able to say they will never perish. Nothing will ever deliver them or snatch them out of my hand. That's in John 10:28. The implication of that verse in John 10 is that some will attempt to snatch. There are forces out there who seek to do the sheep harm. Satan, sometimes described as a prince of darkness, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour, is always on the lookout for someone to harm, part of the flock to harm. Yes, for sure, the shadows of his darkness may threaten us and may for a time close in around about us, but his darkness has nothing in it that can have us. The good shepherd is not only with us as he was with David, he is in us by his spirit. And it says clearly in the Bible, he who is in us is greater than he who is in the world. Greater than the so-called prince of darkness. We can resist the devil, it says in James 4:7, and he will flee from us. Now the rod is not the only thing in the hand of the shepherd, the good shepherd. He's also holding a staff. The rod, a weapon to deter. The staff used to direct the sheep, to round the sheep up, to pull them in. One instrument for defence, the other for guidance and correction, to keep the sheep on the right path, going in the right direction. We want Jesus to protect us, don't we, from those who threaten us or seek to do us harm. We do. We're comfortable enough with the idea of him coming down hard on them. But we're less enamoured when he reaches out to us personally with the staff to direct us somewhere we don't want to go. The greatest threat I have to me walking continually on the path of righteousness lies within me. It's my own sinful heart, my own sinful nature, my love of self, my distorted belief that the grass might be greener somewhere else, or that the path of righteousness is not, for me right now, the path of happiness or the path of an easier life. The wide road might be better. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. No wonder that was written into the hymns. We all need the shepherd's staff in our life to continually pull us back to him, to his path, and to his purpose for our lives. Some of us may have wandered from the path of righteousness and are grazing in fields we should never have visited. We might be in a relationship we know we shouldn't be in, or we're thinking about getting into a relationship we know we shouldn't even be thinking about. Might be that we're not reading our Bibles as much as we used to do, or not in church as much as we used to be. We're not meeting with other Christian friends as we did once before. No longer attending prayer meetings or Bible studies as we once did. Whatever the specific, if that's you, we can sense that something's not right. We can sense this new distance opening up between us and the rest of the flock. And it's all because we've been slowly but surely moving in the wrong direction. We are no longer comforted as we once were. If that's the case for anybody, and you need, it's time to come home. You need to look up and see how far you've wandered, to see the Good Shepherd who is waiting for you, to walk with you. The sense we have of whether our souls are being daily restored by Jesus, as described in verse 2, "He restores my soul," will be directly proportional to our need to be in his presence. If we don't think we need him, then we're not going to be restored by him. And it's the same here in verse 4. The fear we feel in the valley will be indirectly proportional to our need to be in his presence. If we do not sense our need for him, if we don't sense our need for him, we'll be going into the darkness alone, and the greater will be our fear. Our walking with him, our intimacy, the intimacy of our relationship with him, our familiarity with him and his word and his people and his means of grace, these are the ways in which his rod and his staff will offer our souls the most profound comfort. Now, I'm just going to bring this to a close. We're just 3 weeks, basically, into the year 2026. Now, are any of us going to experience dark valleys this year ahead? I'll say almost certainly. Almost certainly. However, if you can truly see that the Lord is your shepherd, that you have repented and trusted in his sacrifice on the cross, that he's laid down his life for you, then Psalm 23 is for you and all that it contains. And even when you walk through your dark valleys, the darkness valley, you don't need to fear that darkness or evil, because the Good Shepherd is with you. His presence, his rod, his staff, his spirit dwelling within you will protect you and guide you and give you all the comfort you need to know for all of this year and indeed for the remaining days of your life. However, if you're here today and not truly able to say that the Lord is your shepherd, you will know this in your heart. You can come to church all your life and still be outside of the shepherd's care. You will know. Then I would urge you to speak to someone before you leave here. Don't leave here without speaking to someone. You do not want to go into the inevitable dark valleys of your life, whatever form these valleys will take, alone, apart from the Good Shepherd, who loves you so much that he did lay down his life for you. So that he could walk with you, so he could have a relationship with you. For all of us, the Good Shepherd, the Lord Jesus, is here right now, reaching out his hand to you and to me, not to explain our valleys to us, but to walk with us through them. I would urge you to take hold of that hand and walk hand in hand with Jesus into all the days of your life that lie ahead of you. I know that as you do, then all the promises of Psalm 23 are yours. Surely goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life, and in the fullness of time you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.